Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why X and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for yet another episode. We've got another fun one. Don't we always? Aren't they all fun? I hope so. But on this episode, my guest is author and podcaster Brian Ferguson. We're going to talk about his book on Vern Gagne titled Vern, Inside and Outside the Ropes. So that's all I got for this opening. I just want to get to the interview. I want to talk Vern Gagne. I want to talk to Brian. So let's get to it. Let's take a break. And when I come back, I'll have my interview with Brian Ferguson.
Hey, you bums. We have to take a quick break.
Hillsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Philsinger Games, PhilsingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams. Hey ho, everybody. Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
Welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by Brian Ferguson, author of Vern, Inside and Outside the Ropes, a biography, on Vern Gagne. Sir, how are you?
I'm doing great, Dave. Thanks for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Brian. I mean, you and I have been in the same circles for a while. We've interacted back in the WFIA, but I think this is the first time you and I have spoke one-on-one.
You are correct, sir. Yes, it is.
That's crazy. It feels like we should have done this already, but
yeah, no,
that's okay, because this is a good reason to bring us together. Your book is it's astonishing to me that there's not been a biography of Vern Gagne already out there. What made you decide to jump in and write it, and why Vern?
Well, I jumped into to write it because I wanted to do a book on Vern, and Vern, to me, is one of the most underrated, in my opinion, and underappreciated pro wrestlers. Really, one of the true pioneers of the business in the 50s, 60s, and into the 70s. And you don't hear that name as often as you should. You hear other names of more modern wrestlers.
Yeah.
And so I really thought it was time, because when I was a kid, you know, I grew up in the 80s, and Vern was at the end of his career. Mm-hmm. However, he was still, I remember as a little kid in the 70s, I would see him on AWA All-Star Wrestling almost every weekend. And I just felt like he didn't get the recognition he deserved. So I decided to write this book, and it took quite a bit of time and research, but I think it's a good book overall, being biased, of course. And yeah, I really enjoyed researching on him. I found out a lot of things I didn't know before.
Yeah, and it's funny. I agree, but it's funny that you would use the term underappreciated with Vern Gagne, because given the career he's had, it's baffling to think that he would be underappreciated. Yeah. But you're right, and we'll talk about some of that and some of the reasons why I think that is, and we'll get your input.
Sure.
But I want to give kind of just a brief overview of Vern. I don't want to give away everything, because I really want people to go out and buy your book.
Yeah.
But one thing that I think is kind of key with Vern is that on his personal life, he lost mm-hmm. his mother at a young age and was kind of on his own. And it's kind of remarkable that given that, what he accomplished through high school and college, given those circumstances, I think this is a, if you look back, and we'll talk about it again, like I said, a little later when we get further into his life and career, I think this is pretty key on a lot of things.
Yeah, I think, you know, Vern, a lot of kids, I shouldn't say a lot, some kids that are in his situation would probably go down the wrong path and get into trouble and blame everybody else for their issues and concerns. Fortunately for Vern, he had a football coach by the name of Walter Red Sachaki, who really was like a father figure to him. Mm. And that guy, if it wasn't for Red, he was known as Red. The family all knew him as Red. I think he would have probably went down a different path. Now, he did live with his aunt and uncle. His dad wanted him to quit school and work on the farm and other things with his dad. And Vern said no, so they put him in with his uncle, aunt and uncle. And I really believe it wasn't for Coach Red that we wouldn't know the Vern Gagne that we know of today. So thank Coach Red.
Yeah, I mean, because those of us who were, pro wrestling fans and who study the history, right, we all know as Vern Gagne and how decorated he was, how many world titles he held, and et cetera, et cetera. But he was equally as accomplished as an amateur. And
he was.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about that, because, again, a guy coming from like this weird circumstance, this family situation, it's wild to think.
Yeah. Vern's outlet was really athletics. He was not a very good student in scholastically, but athletically he was very gifted. So when he was in high school, he was a high school wrestling state champion. He was also an all-state football player, mm-hmm. where he was actually all-state at left tackle, even though he never played the position. He always played the end position, either the right or left end. But for some reason, I guess because of his speed and his ability to block, they selected him to be all-state at left tackle in high school. In college, he was a very heavily recruited football player. And I'll give one little thing away. He was drafted by two teams, Chicago Bears and the Cleveland Browns in 1947. However, the 1947 football season, Vern did not play football because he was academically ineligible.
Okay.
So he was still, this is how good he was. He was still drafted by these two teams, even though he did not play a down in the college 1948 college football season. So that tells you a lot. He was a four-time Big Nine, now known as Big Ten, wrestling champion at different weight levels. He was 191, 175, and heavyweight, over 200 pounds. And just remarkable young man. He was not academically, like I said earlier, gifted, but in the end, in order to graduate and to play, he had to get a tutor.
Yeah.
So he hired a tutor, his dad did, and they got him a tutor, and he made it through there. But, you know, it's funny. He wasn't very academically gifted, but he was a heck of a businessman, so he caught on fast. He was, I guess he was street smart.
That's right.
He caught on to the business and how to run the promotion for over 30 years. So, but yeah, he is very fortunate, Dave, that he had some influences in his life that were fortunately guided him in the right direction.
Yeah, and he always maintained that love of amateur wrestling all through the AWA, right? He was always featuring amateur wrestlers on his shows and showing them and everything else. And he always love those guys with the amateur backgrounds and stuff. So he never let go of that love of amateur wrestling throughout his life.
No, he didn't. He, whenever the AWA, Vern heavily was a big booster for the University of Minnesota and their wrestling team. He would give thousands of dollars to their booster to get those guys. 'Cause back then they didn't have the program like they would have today where a lot of it, you know, grants and stuff. But back then, to travel, they had to have money. And Vern was very keen on doing it. Same with the football team. He was a booster of the football team for Minnesota. High schools and junior high schools, he would give donations to them. And he would also put on wrestling clinics for these high school and junior high students. He would have a day where he would go out to a local high school or junior high school and do a clinic for a day. And you don't see that today, but he did that. He was very passionate about giving back because of how he grew up. He knew how rough it was. And he didn't want people that had a lot of potential athletically to lose their, you know, their way. So he was very good at that. He doesn't get a lot of credit for that. You know, a lot of people speak not very highly of him. They say two good things about Vern. He paid well and he gave you time off.
Yeah.
But I guess he was a businessman. So, you know, he's not going to be your friend all the time. And so, he did a lot of things behind the scenes that people didn't know about. And I tried to bring that out in the book as well. So,
a lot of fans, modern fans, I mean, Vern falls victim a lot, like so many guys do, to that video age thing, right? I mean, because when Vern was in his prime, there wasn't as much video, right? There's not as much out there.
Right.
And a lot of fans only know Vern from the late 70s through the 80s. There are the older Vern, and people give him the stigma of, you know, holding on to glory and blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't think those fans can grasp the Vern of the 50s, particularly the 50s and so on.
Yeah.
When he was on the Dumont Network out of Chicago and how he was perhaps the most known professional wrestler in the country.
Oh, without a doubt. Vern Gagne really next to Lou. I mean, Vern Gagne by 1952 was making $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
He was on the same level as the world heavyweight champion, Lou Thesz. And if he would have stuck with football, if he would have tried out for another team or something when he got cut by the Packers, he only would have made $5,000 a year. And so and back then too, they were really trying to clean up the wrestling image, because in the late 40s, after World War II, during World War II and a little bit after, it kind of became a sideshow, if you will. It was wrestlers wrestling bears or coming out as all these different oddball characters that people, you know, were like at a carnival.
Yeah.
And Vern and some others that really had that amateur background said, I'm not going in with no gimmick. I'm going in with my name. I'm going in with how I look, and I'm going to wrestle. Now, of course, yes, you had to accommodate the pro versus the amateur, you know, the moves and stuff like that. But it really got cleaned up, and people were really starting to come back out in the 50s. And Vern Gagne, Hans Schmidt, Killer Kowalski, Lou Thesz, Antonio Rocca, those guys were the top of the top. Wilbur Schneider, mm-hmm. Those guys were the top cream of the crop, you know, and they were on every week on the Dumont Network out of Chicago. And Chicago was really what, and that international or that national platform, that television network really put wrestling on the map, and Vern.
Yeah.
So it really did wonders for the business, because people were watching it. People were going back to the wrestling shows, even, you know, they were still held at armories and VFW halls and things like that. But it was getting more interesting, because there's actually looked like tough guys, like realistic men, not these clowns and other things that were coming out before that. So it really had a huge impact on society and professional wrestling in general. So,
yeah. And while I'm sure there's probably not a definitive answer, right? No one knows, but what is speculate for me? Okay. What is the reason that maybe Vern didn't ever get an NWA title reign in the 50s or 60s?
Okay. What I've been told in some of my research is that Lou Thesz didn't want Vern to be the champion because they didn't like each other. And also he thought, now this is speculation on this part, mm-hmm. I've been told that Thesz thought Gagne would be more recognized and more bigger than Thesz.
Yeah.
And Thesz didn't want that. Sam Mushnick didn't want that. There was a lot of politics in the background of that. And his size. Okay. Vern was 5'11", 6 feet, depending. And he weighed about 215 to 220 pounds. Wrestlers like Lou Thesz was, you know, he was 6'3", 6'4", and was 240 to 50 pounds. You know, they wanted a guy in there that was big, but also could move. And Vern, with all his credentials, and everybody knew he should have been champion. And then in the book, it talks about there was a kind of a title change, and I don't want to give it too much away about it, but
yeah.
There was something that happened, but then it got all mucked, if you will. And that's why he started the American Wrestling Alliance in 1960.
Yeah. I mean, imagine that, politics and wrestling. And, yeah. but like you said, right, Vern, some of the issues with the NWA, and obviously, right, the money was in promoting, and Vern, yeah, as so many over time have known, know that, you know, he formed the AWA.
Right.
And, man, I'm telling you, again, so many people, they you hear things about the AWA And you hear these weird things about the Team Challenge series and this and that and in the late show. Those people don't understand what a powerhouse that the AWA was. Geographically, it was the largest territory in the country.
It was.
It ran, correct. and in that geography, there were some major markets. The attendance was great. They were developing stars. What is it about Vern that clicked that helped him transition? In your opinion, I mean, because obviously you can't, right? There's no definitive answer why, but to that success as a promoter, because the AWA was hot and big for a long, long time, and we'll talk more about the speculative of what the AWA could have been. But what is it about Vern that just worked as a promoter?
I think, in my opinion, doing a lot of Vern, one knew he networked a lot. He would, like, when he was expanding the territory, he would go out to all these venues and television stations and work out deals. Now, back then, it was all a handshake. It was all. There was no written contracts or anything like that. They did it by your word is your bond and your handshake is your honor. And he would go out there and, you know, he developed over 144 wrestlers. In his time in the clinic. You know, the class of 72 is the most well-known one with, you know, Greg Gagne's son, Jimmy Brunzel, Patera, Iron Sheik, Bob Bruggers, and it was just, but the AWA is on fire. I think one, because people, wrestlers, like, he paid very well. Okay. Vern wasn't no stiff on his guys, and he would pay very well. Two is that they only work 270 days a year.
Yep.
Okay. So, you think about that for a wrestler, you're traveling all over the place, but still, okay, they got 6 weeks off in the summer, usually from end of mid-May through the end of June. And then they kick back up in July. But, and people like that. And they knew Vern wasn't going to stiff them. And Vern would work with these guys. Now, some of them, you know, you hear some things, but overall, Vern worked with these guys to make sure that they could wrestle their techniques if he needed to improve their techniques, and to speak on, you know, the mic. If they couldn't speak, guess what? He put them with a manager like Bobby Heenan, Johnny Valiant, or Lord L. Hayes, somebody like that. If you can't talk very good, but you can wrestle and you can draw, he'll put you with a manager that can do the talking for you. So I think that was key. And plus, I really believe that Vern understood the business in that era of, you know, because he, you know, the politics and stuff, and he tried to work with these guys, and guys came and went. That's how it was back then.
Sure.
But, you know, if you came to the AWA, you were going to get a good payday. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's kind of the Nick Bockwinkel thing, right? We always heard, you know, Nick got offers, right? Had all these invites, but he was like, hey, I can stay here, work less days, make just as much money.
Exactly.
So, you know, why would I leave?
Right.
And I'm originally, you know, anybody that knows me or has listened to the show knows, I'm originally from Indiana. I'm a Dick the Bruiser fan.
Yeah, you are a Dick the Bruiser
fan. I am. Yeah. And Vern obviously had a long time working relationship with Dick the Bruiser, right? He used him prominently in the AWA for many, many years.
Yes.
And then they also co-owned and promoted in Chicago.
Yep.
And when you were doing some of your research, did you unearth anything about that relationship between Vern and Bruiser? How, you know, as far as, cause they seem kind of different, right? Cause Bruiser was never known for his great payoffs. And everything else, and it was just comfortable doing his little thing and everything. How did they? Did you unearth anything about how they got along or what it is that clicked between the two.
Yeah, I think because they did work together in Chicago, and I think they clicked together because Bruiser in the especially the 50s and 60s and in the early 70s was a huge draw.
Right.
So I think Vern real could, you know, working with the guy, he was kind of stiff on paying people out. But I think when Vern was around, when they worked together, I think Vern kind of said, hey, we got to pay these guys or they're not going to come back.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had a little rivalry with the Sheik in Detroit for a little mm-hmm, while. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure fans, if you don't, you can. There's plenty about it to where they were having running shows against each other. They got that settled finally, you know. But Vern, I think, you know, he could work with just about anybody promoter wise. I mean, he had, you know, he had the largest territory in the country at one time, but he had to have guys to run it.
Sure,
you know, so. You have to be able to trust. I think trust was an issue. He trusted Bruiser. Bruiser wasn't going to stiff him either.
Yeah.
You got to have guys that you trust to run these organizations. And I think that was a big element of it too. He trusted Bruiser. They've been through the trenches together. And so I think it kind of might look like a bad relationship on the outside, but I think once you get inside there, you can see that they actually worked well together.
So. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of similarities, right? Because a lot of the guys that Bruiser used were those same guys, right? The guys that Bruiser had worked a million times, knew Bruiser, trusted Bruiser, came in and worked with him. Yeah. Same concept and everything else, right? And then, I mean, it's a whole side tangent, but there's also the Wilbur Snyder factor, right? I mean, that Vern and Wilbur knew each other, and Wilbur was Bruiser's partner. So I'm sure there was some of that in there as well.
Yeah.
And on that same line, we talked about how Vern loved those amateur guys, right? That had the amateur background. But if you look at the AWA, he also appreciated those unique monster wild kind of guys, the Bruisers, the Crushers, the Vachons.
Yeah.
I mean, these were all big stars for the AWA.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, I mean, to me, and what do you think? It boils down to that old school approach of him, right? That initially you have the clean cut amateur good guy against this wild, crazy ass heel. And of course, some of those heels became faces and over time because of the fans.
Yeah.
But I think that's Vern's thinking, right? And, you know, he always used the foreign menaces and everything else. It's very that simplistic old school booking techniques. And it worked for a long time for Vern.
It did. And, you know, you talk about the big brawlers and stuff. You're right. The guys, the baby faces and the heels, there was never, very, very rarely was there a baby face versus baby face. Very rarely.
Yeah.
But, or heel versus heel. But I will tell you that, and Vern was very smart about that. He kept the kayfabe too. Yep. He made sure that when they were in a city or a town, that they were always separated. There was no baby face and heels hanging out together. And if they were, they had to be at a very disclosed location where nobody else was allowed in there, but the wrestlers. Yep. So, things like that. But you're right. But there's also, you know, one of the best heels I ever thought of in that era was Nick Bockwinkel. Okay. Vern and him were actually like best friends outside the ring and stuff. But I will tell you that, you know, him and Ray Stevens, that combo was absolutely phenomenal. But you're right. The brawlers, the big bad Bobby Duncan.
Yeah,
and Lanza and the Blackjacks were there. The Valiant Brothers, I mean, there was a who's who, but Vern knew how to use them. That was the thing. He knew how to use people. I mean, they brought in people sometimes that went nowhere in another promotion. if they were in NWA and they weren't getting any traction, they would call, you know, they usually call Vern and say, hey, can we send this guy to you? Maybe you could work with him. And they'd do it, and all of a sudden they'd be a star.
Yeah, I will forever, I mean, in my mind, and I don't think anybody will ever change it. Nick Bockwinkel to me is the prototypical world champion. He has everything that you would want in a world champion. He's captivating. I mean, in the ring, on the mic. I don't think there was anybody better. And it's odd because for someone who could talk so well, the combination of him and Heenan was just perfect. It's weird to think of.
Very, very true. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, and one of the criticisms on Vern, like so many other promoters of his era, like Bruiser and others, is that they receive criticism for kind of falling behind the times, right? When it gets later.
Yep.
But it's funny to think about Vern, because you think about Vern, you know, he at various times he had TV on ESPN.
Yep.
He had Hulk Hogan, who was becoming the hottest attraction in wrestling. At one time he had the Road Warriors when they were becoming the top tag team in the world.
Yeah.
And it's kind of odd to think about these things, that a few choice decisions, a few things maybe a little differently, that Vern could have very well been the one that broke nationally.
Yeah.
What is it that you think maybe held Vern up from kicking it up that extra notch?
I honestly believe if Vern would have had the same mentality in 1983 that he had in when he broke away from the NWA in 59-60 because of politics, and looked at himself and said, I got to change something here because we're losing traction. If he would have had that same mentality, and he would have at least, okay, so, you know, the battles with Bockwinkel and Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
Hogan, before the AWA, really was, I mean, he had been places and he won a few titles and stuff, but he wasn't well known at all. He wasn't making it up to that upper card level, main event status.
Yeah.
And what do you know? He goes to the AWA. They change a few things. They have him become more of a wrestler than just a guy that stands on his feet and takes hits.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you know? Voila. Mm-hmm. He's the highest traction in that era, in that time. Right. And I really believe that if Gagne would have made Bach or Hogan the champion at Super Sunday in 83 in April, even just for 3 months, 90 days, made him the champion, have him do some dates and lose it back maybe to Bockwinkel or another one, another younger person or something that's up and coming. I think that would have changed the whole dynamic. Hogan would have stayed there. And I think a lot of things would be different in today's world. Because Dave, you know this, you're a wrestling guru. There were 26 territories.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 80s, there was 26 territories. So if you didn't like a place you were getting, or you're getting stale, you could go to another one, no problem.
Yep.
Well, after McMahon bought his dad's and his other guys' shares, and expanded everything, you know, that was becoming more and more impossible. And now look at today. I mean, there's two or three. I mean, you got WWE, AEW, and TNA Impact. But where else? That's it. I mean, that's the sad part about it, is you can't do that anymore. Where, okay, I'm not doing very well here in WWE. I'm going to go to I can go to the AWA Minnesota and work up there for maybe a year, get some more exposure and make money. So I think if Vern would have made that decision of giving it to Hogan for at least a few months and giving some more guys some exposure I think things would be a lot different today.
Yeah, and well, I mean, there's it's this weird thing at that time, and yeah. lots of territories did it right where you didn't know who you could trust. So right. there was a lot of matches, a lot of title changes, I should say,
yeah.
where they filmed things to give themselves outs if they needed to.
Right.
And I think what's weird is with Vern, he leaned towards, he did that quite a bit, right? He gave himself outs for things. I mean, yeah. how many times did Vern use Stanley Blackburn, right, to nullify title changes?
Right.
But with Vern, it's like he didn't try the title change and keep that out in his back pocket in case he needed it.
Right.
Other territories did that, right? They would give the, go ahead and yeah. do the title change, keep it in yeah. case they needed it.
Right.
Vern just, he pulled the trigger, I think, too quick. You know, and again, a lot of it's yeah. speculative. I mean, there's talks about Vern and Hogan and Japan money, and there's a lot of factors. I'm that, sure.
I can tell you, I've talked to several, and I know Hogan said it on that video, but that's hogwash. That never happened.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me that Hogan said something that wasn't true?
Yeah.
I don't believe that's, that.
That is hogwash. I've spoken to several people when I was doing my research, and I asked them about that. They said that Vern was keeping all the profits on the t-shirts and this and that. Vern got 10% of the t-shirt deals mm-hmm. off anybody. It was 10%. And they had him made at a place in Minneapolis there.
Mm-hmm.
They had the shirts made and all that stuff, the flags, all that stuff. They would do a deal, and Vern got like 10%.
Okay.
Hogan and all these other guys, they got whatever it did, whatever that was left out of from the cost of the making the product, and they sold it, they got the rest. So that was hogwash. And I just think at that point when they were doing that kind of segment, they were just trying to bury Vern. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, it's, and then, right. I've heard a story that Vern's son, Greg, has told, yeah. and he told directly to me as well in an interview, that they had, they being the AWA, had the opportunity to do network primetime TV specials before the WWF did it with Saturday Night's Main Event. Did you ever, I don't know that there would be any, but did you ever right. unearth any proof of this, any other accounts of this? I love Greg, but he does have a tendency sometimes to embellish things.
Yes. And, well, I will tell you, there was a deal. There was actually two deals. One was the in 84, where they were going to be on a CBS television special.
Mm-hmm.
They had gotten a call, and I asked not just Greg, I asked a few others that if that was legit, and that was legit. And yeah. when it started going south, when Hogan left and Okerlund left and Ventura left, they pulled the plug. There was also another one in, I believe it was 89 or 90, right before they closed the promotion. They had we're getting a deal with WGN out of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They were going to, and that was national then still. And they were going to do they were going to take over the weekly show, make it more attractive, and they were going to do a primetime special.
Wow.
But unfortunately, the week that was supposed to start is when, I guess, apparently a bunch of the newspaper writers across America all went on strike, and
yeah,
they had to nix it. And then, of course, a few months later, the AWA had to close. So there was some bad, I think there was some bad business decisions. Obviously there was, where Vern was trying to stick to the old school mentality.
Yeah.
And my understanding too, is that Greg would try to talk to him about stuff because Greg helped run the promotion.
Yeah,
right. He really did. And Greg could only do so much because he didn't, you know, he wasn't a part owner or anything. He just helped run this place. But they had, he really thought that it was a fad with the WWF at the time, with all the, you know, the characters, the cartoon characters and all the, all that stuff. He thought this won't last more than a year and we'll be fine. Well,
yeah,
he was wrong. And sure. Unfortunately, after that, he had a lot of trouble as well. And we can talk about that too, if you'd like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, we'll get there. And it's funny, kind of on a side note, I didn't have this kind of in my notes, but you mentioned that light in, you know, the end 89, 90 type AW. It's funny because so many people, I hear people knock it, right? And everything.
Right.
I'm sorry. Maybe it's nostalgia on my part. I love that in the final years, AWA still. Maybe it's because I was watching it on AWA, yeah. Or excuse me, on ESPN at the time. Yeah. And I mean, I have so many memories of this stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, Zabisco title run and Saito and everything Saito. Else. Yeah. And it's like, and you know, and I'm telling you, I absolutely love the Destruction Crew as a tag team.
Yes.
As champions.
Mike Eunice, and Wayne Bloom. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I understand. I guess I understand people's thinking on that, but yeah. I have so much love for that stuff in my heart. And it's hard for me to hear insults about that stuff. I get defensive for some reason.
Yeah, I do too. Because you know what? If you actually go back and watch Super Clash 3 that was in Chicago.
Man, that was such a big event in my life.
It was a huge event. I mean, they didn't draw a lot, but they should have. I mean, all the people that were there wrestling, there was the who's who. And, you know, it was great. I mean, I just watched it again recently. And
I love it.
Yeah. And I couldn't believe that.
Man, me and my friends would debate for hours on Lawler and Von Erich on who was going to win. And and in our minds, we're thinking, this is such a big thing. This is a title unification. And call me a mark. I don't give a crap. Whatever.
Yeah.
Man, I loved it. I was so into it. And, you know, I mean, I loved Lawler. I loved Kerry Von Erich. And I know they did, at this point, they did it a million times, right? They did all these matches through Memphis and whatever. I don't know. It was so cool to me at that time. Yeah. And maybe it's, you know, the After Mags getting on board and hyping it. I don't, whatever it might be. It felt big.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I loved everything wrestling. So it's like, I would defend anything, at that time, but let's steer back here a little bit.
Sure.
Keeping on the Greg Vern thing, right? Well, one thing we talked about how the AWA sometimes, like so many promotions, was a little behind the curve, but it's, you know, right. It's easy to do, right? How can you speculate what's going to happen? But one thing that they were clearly ahead of the curve on was action figures.
Yes.
The AWA, right, had the first pro wrestling action figures with Remco.
Yep.
Again, such a bright spot in my childhood.
Yes.
I think you can look at these action figures as this weird dichotomy of the AWA, that Vern has this old school approach, this mentality, but yes, somehow they have the first action figures.
Yeah.
I don't know if this comes up. I don't know if this came up in any of your discussions. In your opinion, was this a Vern versus Greg thing?
Well, I think it was brought up to him by Greg. And I think Vern saw the potential, because if you may not know or remember this, but Vern sold a lot of products in the 50s and 60s. All right. He was he had the first wrestling board game.
That's right.
He was on it's Vern Gagne game, Vern Gagne wrestling game. He sold vitamins. He sold protein powder.
Sure did.
He sold Gagne metrics, you know, how to get fit in the house, you know, with 10 minutes. And so I think it was brought to them, and Greg approached Vern about it, and Vern's like, yeah, let's do it. And I think they should have made more figures. I think they should have, you know, you have, you know, a series with, you know, Greg and Jim and Road Warriors and Abdullah and those guys. But I think they should have made more of the classic guys like Vachon. You know, yeah, they never made one of the Vachon brothers, the Blackjacks, or, you know, some of those guys that were really the key component of, you know, in the late 70s and early 80s. But yeah, I that was a thing, and they actually did pretty well from what I understand.
Yeah.
And I think if they would have, you know, marketing, they marketed it. Yeah. They had, but you know, I mean, I've got some of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Unfortunately not in the container anymore, but
yeah.
I have them. And, but yeah, I think that was great. You know, people probably ridiculed it, but what do you know, a few years later, what was Vince doing? Same thing.
Sure. Yeah. And of course, I don't know, maybe I was just at the right time. Right. But these were to scale and whatever, like the Masters of the Universe figures. And I love that. And, but it's like, you look at that time and it's like, okay, where else do you get Fabulous Freebirds figures, or where else do you get Road Warriors figures?
Right.
At that time, it was just so cool.
Yeah.
And of course, like on a side note, right, with what is it called? Power Town? Is that what it's called?
Power Town.
Yeah. Where they're back, right? I should know that because I did order the Bobo Brazil figure that's on the way.
Yeah.
And they're doing those Remco. It's so cool. But it's like, you know, as a collector and a figure guy, I mean, I'm not a huge figure guy, but
right,
I was when I was younger. I mean, it's like, I love those figures. And, you know, they were just so cool. And I always thought, right, that there was that Greg influence, right? And and it's weird that, right, Greg obviously has a lot of respect for his father. He's always been this champion for his father.
Yeah.
But it's always struck me that they had this very unique relationship.
Yeah.
Because most of us have a strictly father-son relationship. Mm-hmm. Greg, for so many years, worked for his father.
Yes.
Obviously, then you have, I'm sure, the influences of Vern and his childhood and some of those influences. What did you unearth anything about that relationship? I know Greg's not always been real open about the personal relationship between the two.
Right. Well, he was actually, in the book, it talks about his relationship with his dad. Now I will tell you, it wasn't like, Leave It to Beaver or Ozzie and Harriet or anything. But I will tell you that they grew up in an environment where they were expected to be well behaved, and they were they had to play sports, they were. Vern wasn't there a lot during their early formative years. I'll say wife Mary did a lot of, you know, took care of the children, and stuff. But when Vern was there, you know, they all ran up, hey, daddy, you know, and all that. They did that kind of stuff. They did a lot of things together when Vern was there. They'd go on trips and stuff, and they'd do that. I will tell you that Greg told me a story that his father told him three times in his life that he was proud of him. One was, I believe it was a high school football game. And he was a quarterback, and he had like the best game of his life up to that point. And he went up to him after the game and said, that was probably the best game I've ever seen. I'm very proud of you. Another time was when he was wrestling match. And he, after the match, it was with him and Jimmy Brunzel.
Yeah.
They were Tito Santana and Rick Martel.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he told him, That was probably the best match I've ever seen, watched.
Yeah.
Which was a huge compliment. And then there was another time, I believe it was another wrestling event where he told them, you know, or it was them two. They were wrestling together. They were a tag team. And he goes, that was probably one of the best matches I've ever had with a tag team partner.
Yeah.
And that was the three times he told them that. The girls, you know, there's three daughters. Greg's the oldest. And there's Kathy, Beth, and Donna.
Yeah.
And, you know, Beth, to me, I didn't even, I'll be honest, until I started researching this, I never even knew Beth was part. I thought he just had two sisters.
Yeah.
Kathy and Donna, because they were involved in the business.
Yeah.
And Kathy, or not Kathy, Beth, she was on board at first, and then she decided not to do part of the book, which I understand. I said, okay, I agree with you. If you don't want to do it, I didn't want to pressure her or nothing. All I mentioned her is a few times in the book when she was born and a couple of events, and that was fine. But, you know, Donna or Kathy and Donna were contributors. They, a lot of the photos you see of Vern Young was actually from Donna. She had this huge collection that she let me go through and use. So like the front cover of the book, Donna had that photograph.
Now, which one is married to Larry Zbyszko?
Well, she was married. She's not anymore. That was Kathy.
That's Kathy. Okay.
She's the oldest sister.
Gotcha. Okay.
She's not married. She hasn't been married to him for quite a few years.
Okay.
She was married to Larry Zbyszko.
Now, Donna was on AWA TV for many years doing segments and different things. Yeah.
Yep. 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 Donna never married. She raised, her passion besides doing the wrestling was showing horses.
Oh, okay.
She, as a national champion in horse showing.
Huh.
So yeah, I was very surprised at that. And that's up in the book too. And Kathy was a gymnast for many years, gymnastics. She did that in high school and college. And then she went on to coach gymnastics for many years. And, yeah, that's quite an interesting family. They all loved their dad. They all respected their dad and their mother very much.
Yeah.
When at the end, when Vern was, you know, with his Alzheimer's and stuff.
Yeah.
They had Beth is the one that took him in. Him and her husband Will took care of him the last few years of his life and. Yeah, so it was they're a tight group though. I mean they could talk bad about each other, but don't have no outsider talk bad about them. I can tell you that.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, I always felt bad for Greg when I was young as a fan. You know, I mean, I appreciated Greg for what he was, but then even in the magazines, whatever, there was always the comparison between Greg and Vern, and it's like, but then it's like if you just take Greg, don't forget that Vern's his dad. And if you take, you know, he had a good career, and especially with, you know, Greg and Brunzell. I mean, they were a great tag team.
They were.
And, you know, and I mean, but that was the nature of the business then and what have you.
Yeah.
And, and again, I don't want to give everything away. But just, is there anything that you discovered that really surprised you or that maybe you had never heard about Vern? Is there something you can give away?
Sure. I'll give a few things away, if you will. I didn't know that his father, they weren't very, like the Greg and the kids were not very close with Vern's dad.
Mm-hmm.
Clarence. And the reason was because Clarence was an alcoholic.
Okay.
And when Vern's mother died when he was 12 years old, they came back from her parents' house, their grandparents, for the weekend.
Yeah.
him and his brother, Will, his other brother, Jerry, and Rose. They all came back. Excuse me. Well, they found their mother in the living room, and she was, you know, deceased. Clarence was nowhere to be found. Will and Vern had to go to the local establishment, if you will, and get Clarence to find out that his wife had passed away from the stomach cancer.
Yeah.
That was kind of a shocker to me.
Yeah.
Another shocker was his time in the Marine Corps. He was selected to be a combat hand-to-hand instructor. Mm. When he went to his training for it at Quantico, the trainers always challenged the students, right? They said, okay, anybody want to come up here and challenge us? Yeah. Well, one of the instructors went up to Vern. Vern, for that era, was a bigger guy. You know, he was well-built, and wasn't a skinny, scrawny guy. And one of the instructors went up to Vern. They said, hey, I want, let's see what you can do. Vern, multiple times, didn't want to do it. He said, no. I'm just here to, well, they finally were like antagonizing him so much that they did it. And he whooped the guy's ass.
I bet.
Pardon my French.
Yeah, it's okay.
Embarrassed the instructor. And then, of course, they offered him a position there on the spot. Hey, we want you here at Quantico to train. But he wanted to go back to El Toro, California, where the flying base is, because he was playing for the El Toro Marines, the football team.
Yeah.
So that was something I learned. And I learned some other things about, you know, his wife. I didn't realize she had a lot of health issues that they couldn't figure out for a lot of years.
Yeah.
She had a tumor in her brain that they didn't know about for years. She was getting these headaches. It was one of the, I can't remember the name of the disease off the top of my head, but it was one that actually made her hands and feet grow. Like she had, when it got to a point where her hands and her feet were really big, they finally did some surgery at the University of Minnesota in 1960. She was like the first person to have this type of surgery done. And it got, you know, it got it to where it wasn't an issue with that part of her, but just things like that. And I didn't know that, you know, Vern, whenever he would be away, he would always get home, even if it was for like for a day or two. You know, some guys just stay on the road and hotels. He would come home.
Yeah.
He would, he was a very big on the family. And just some other things that, you know, it was, he's a very interesting character, very interesting man, not just as a wrestler, but as a person.
Yeah.
You would, he was a big part of the American Legion because he was a veteran. He couldn't join the VFW because he didn't go overseas during the war.
Yeah.
But he was a big part of the American Legion. He would go out and raise money for those guys every year. Just things like that. I didn't realize how much he gave back to the community, other than, you know, the wrestling stuff. You know, sure. You see it on the TV when he bring in the guys from the Olympics and all that.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about other community organizations, the American Legion, the Rotary Club, things like that. He would just do stuff for them that he didn't really have to do.
So, yeah. I mean, and like we said earlier, right? I mean, Vern's got pigeonholed. Based yeah. on the video that's out there, you know, the late era AWA. And so, yeah, there's a lot, but there's a lot more. I mean, that's just a small sliver of Vern's life and career. And yeah. So, I mean, I urge everyone to get the book to find out more about Vern. But I got to ask then, Brian, what is next for you? Do you have future projects in mind? Anything else you'd like to explore?
Well, not right now. That book That book took me 2 years to write.
Yeah.
It took a lot of time from my wife and family. They were very supportive of the project. And now what I'm doing, my wife and I, for those that don't know that are on Facebook with us, we are full-time RVers. We're actually in Jacksonville, Florida right now.
Oh, yeah.
And we're actually living here tomorrow, whenever this comes out. It's Thursday, the May 8th is when we're leaving.
Yeah.
So we're doing our RV thing right now.
That's fun.
And we're really enjoying it. And going to see our grandkids here up in Maryland in a few weeks. We're excited about that. I'll be in Waterloo.
Oh, yeah.
In July. Wife and I are going up there for that. I am going to bring some books with me in case somebody wants a book. Or if you bring your book, if you're at Waterloo, I will happily sign it.
There you go.
And guess what? No charge for the signing.
Come on, you didn't learn from Vern? You got to make that dollar.
and no charge for a picture. So
there you go. Can't beat that.
I'm being sarcastic, but I don't charge for that kind of stuff. If you want to buy a book, they'll be like $20, and I'll sign it right there on the spot for you if you want me to, no problem. But and I think we are thinking about going to the CAC again this year.
Yeah, okay.
We're talking about it right now, my wife and I. We didn't go last year, but we went 22 and 23, and we're thinking about going again this year. So if you guys, I know you can't see me on your podcast, but just look me up. And if you see me, please come up and say hello and we could talk. I'm not one of those guys that's going to push you away after a minute. I'll talk to you for 10, 15, whatever minutes, and we'll shoot the breeze, you know. And hopefully, Dave, you and I will meet in person one day.
I know it. I know it. Yeah. I mean, we will.
I mean, you're a legend, you know, on the podcast.
I don't know about that.
Podcast one. Network. I got to meet you in person.
That's right. I guess. But, you know, knowing you, maybe you don't have any plans, but I venture to guess somewhere at some point we might see more from Brian Ferguson. And, but I did want to mention, right, are you still working with the WFIA?
I am the WFIA Wrestling Fans International Association.
Yeah, why don't you plug that a little bit here?
Yeah, we'll talk. We bet. So, Dave, you were a part of it for a while.
I was
got busy, and we appreciate your contributions. But the organization is to promote and grow wrestling, both the fan base and exposure to wrestling, not AEW or AEW and WWE, but those indie promotions.
Yeah.
Those independent promotions that guys and girls bust their tails on to get up in the world. And right now I'm actually working on the biannual newsletter. A few more things to do with that. It should be out hopefully in the next week. And also now, I don't know if you know this, due to cost and things like that, our membership now, we have to charge for a membership. It's $50, but with that $50, you'll get the newsletter. You're going to get updates on different promotions. You're going to get a autographed, your choice of a photo of either Ken Patera, James Beard, let me think here, Greg Gagne, the High Flyers, they both signed them.
Yeah.
Let me think of, trying to remember all of them off the top of my head now, but you'll get an autographed photo of these guys. And I'm going to tell you that alone is worth $50 because it's autographed and it just has their name on it. Larry Hyneme is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Lars Anderson.
And
yep.
Lars Anderson. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to get things going with that. And I think we're getting there. We've gotten some new members. Oh, Bill Apter and Gary Michael Capetta have also signed.
Yeah.
And Les Thatcher. Les Thatcher is another person that's pretty underrated in my mind, too.
He is. He is. I've talked to Les before. Les is, man, I love Les.
If you want to join, just go to the WFI.org. Okay. And then It's $50, and then you'll get a choice of those, one of those, and but there's only a certain amount. So once sure. They're gone, you'll have to choose another one. And I'm trying to get it to where it'll fade out right now, but I'm still working on that. With the pictures gone, it'll fade out. But just work with us. Technology sometimes can be a hinder for me, you know, guy my age. So, but I'm working on it. We're doing, and we're trying to do a lot of good things. We're planning a convention next year in St. Louis.
Yeah,
we're trying to get some guys, some legends, as well as the local talent there. The SICW Herb Simmons promotion, is going to do a show there for us, and their guys are going to be there. We're hoping to get some legends out of there. So we're planning it right now.
It doesn't get more connected and legendary than Herb Simmons.
And Herb Simmons, you know, in St. Louis was a major hub of pro wrestling.
Yeah, you know, same mystic.
I mean, until the 80s.
And Herb worked with him. He knows, right? Yeah, he's been there.
Herb's the who's who. He knows everybody. He is. So
Herb's a good guy. Herb's a
great guy.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, I'm no longer involved. I'm still a supporter of the WFIA. So
you bet.
Go check them out.
We appreciate it.
The WFIA.org. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
There you go. Go check them out. Again, like Brian said, $50. I mean, that's the signed picture alone is worth that. But you got to do it quick so that you get your pick.
Right?
Yeah. You know, don't take what's left. Hurry up and join so that you get it. So you get to choose. Right. And then, what about you personally, Brian? If someone wants to keep track of what you're up to and these appearances you make and future projects you may do, how can they follow you?
Okay. So I also have a podcast called Bumps and Thumps.
That's right. Yeah.
That's I do. We just did a podcast the other day. It'll be out on Monday, the 12th of May. And you can reach me through there. Or Bumps and Thumps has a Facebook page and Instagram. Just type in Bumps and Thumps. It'll come up. We have a cool new logo. I changed the logo up, a little more pop to it and catchy. And also personal page is Brian Ferguson. I'm on Facebook and Instagram. So yeah, just type in my name. Our email is Brian, Brian.C.Ferguson, Ferguson, @gmail.com. Shoot me an email. I'll respond. I'm not shy. I won't ignore you.
Yeah. There you go. Bumps and Thumps. It either sounds like a wrestling podcast or a 90s rap group.
Maybe a little of both, right?
Maybe. Hey, you never know, right? Go listen. Find out for yourself.
Yeah.
And then, of course, again, the book, Vern, Inside and Outside the Ropes, right? You can get it from all book reader, right? Amazon, whatever else. Yeah,
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo Rakuten, and Lulu Press. Now, I will tell you, if you go in the bookstore, they won't have it. You got to do it online. Unfortunately, I'm not, you know.
Well, there's limited shelf space, right?
They're not going to stock my book. So
that's right, yeah.
Go online. It's $20 for the book and $7.99 for the ebook.
There you go.
The ebook is just like the book. The pages flip and it's got the pictures and everything, so.
Well, hopefully everybody's like me, man. I don't ebook. Blah.
I want a copy in my hand, right?
I'm old school.
I'm with you, buddy.
I'm an old guy. I want to feel it. I want to smell it. Yeah. I want to whatever else. So go on Amazon, buy that. Again, maybe you think Vern Gagne, blah blah blah. That's not my thing. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Trust me. Don't just go by what you know. There's more to Vern. Yeah. Again, it's just people underestimate. And it's weird to me to think that people, that Vern's not up there spoken like he should be, because such an impactful player in the history of pro wrestling.
Oh, trained Ric Flair.
trained
Ric Flair.
Yeah, trained
class of 72.
Trained so many guys.
Yeah.
And just incredible. And again, you can't underestimate how big a star this guy was prior to what you know. I mean, just trust me. There's stories to be told, and Brian's got them in his book, so go check them out. So yeah, all right, Brian, we'll connect again. You and I will do, we'll do again. Like I said, I'm sure. Again, you may be taking a break, but I'm sure there'll be more projects for Brian in the future. I'm excited.
We'll see.
Yeah, you know, and I'm excited that somebody wrote a book on Vern. I just, it's again, boggles my mind that that's not been done before. It's just weird.
But way overdue.
It really is. Yeah. And well, I mean, so many, right? I mean, again, I'm a book guy. I love books about everything, but wrestling books are my thing. And there's so many, even the most minuscule of wrestling talents can fill a book full of stories and tales.
Yeah.
And Vern, it's like, it's, man, it's almost like, what do you put in the book and what can you leave out? Because you could fill volumes on Vern. If you really wanted to.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, that's right. Go buy the book and then go out and figure out where Brian is and get him to sign it for you and take a picture with him and everything else. So, but Brian, it was good talking to you. It's good talking, Vern. I love Vern.
Yes. Mr. Dave Dynasty, thank you for having me on. Absolutely. And I'm going to have you on my show sometime.
Absolutely. Anytime. Anytime you want to talk. I love the talk. I love the sound of my own voice. So I'm good. Well, thank you for your time, sir. And
yes, sir.
And good luck with the book. Congratulations
thank
on the
you.
Book. And have fun in that RV life.
All right, I will, sir. And thank you again for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So have a good rest of your week, sir. And we'll talk
soon.
All right,
you too. Thanks.
You bet. See ya. Bye.
Yep.
Hey, you bums. We have to take a quick break.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade. So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
All right. And thank you to Brian for coming on the show and doing that interview and talking to me about his book and Vern Gagne. Guys, I can't recommend it enough. Go get the book. All you got to do is on all major book retailers, but I made it real easy. Just go in the show notes. Click the link that says buy the book, and there you can go. It'll take you straight to Amazon to buy the book.
It's the book on Vern Gagne. You're going to want to read it. It's just amazing. So go and check it out. While you're out there doing your thing, make sure you follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much all the podcasts, or excuse me, I'm on pretty much all the social media platforms. Just look for Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or at The Dave Dynasty, all one word, and you will find me. Also, go check out all the other WrestleCopia network of podcasts. They are all great, great shows, highly insightful, highly informative, entertaining. It's just, it's got everything you want in podcasts. Go to WrestleCopia.com or you can look the shows up on your favorite podcast platform. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. They have a multitude of classic professional wrestling for you to watch so much at a very, very low price. Go to ClassicWrestling.net to sign up and then download the app on all of your smart devices. All right, next episode, my guest will be ECW original Pitbull Gary Wolf. We're going to talk about the Pitbulls, his partner Anthony Durante, ECW, WWE, WCW, training at the Monster Factory, going to Japan, so much more. It's a fun interview. Gary's a good guy. He's a good conversation. Lots of great stories to tell. Gary also has a great book that's out there. We talk about that as well a little bit. So that interview is coming up next episode. Until then, guys, thank you once again for listening. Thank you for subscribing, sharing, rating, reviewing, doing all those things to help us. And until next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.
Wrestling Nostalgia is copyright Dave Dynasty. Bruiser voice done by John Lawson.